Welcome to the Ugly Podcast. I'm Lauren.
And I'm Emerson. And we're trying really hard not to try so hard.
Come hang out with us as we talk about our passion for creativity, authenticity, and heart-centered entrepreneurship. Did I say that right?
Yep, definitely.
Okay. Hi, hello. This is the Ugly Podcast, and we are talking about perfectionism today. My name's Lauren Alexander. My pronouns are she, her. I am the owner of Scribe and Sunshine, which means I'm an editor and a creative coach. That's what I do.
And I'm Emerson Lee. I use they, them pronouns. I'm the founder of Happy Memories Elder Support, and I am an end-of-life companion, planner, and advocate.
Wonderful. What comes to mind when I say the word perfectionism?
My entire life. Literally, constantly, for decades, basically. Just, yeah, that rigid energy of just trying to be perfect in every way is, yeah, very strong.
Yeah. And I mean, we were talking right before we started recording about how this has been like a cornerstone for stuff that I've been talking about. I have a workshop on perfectionism. And even like before coming onto this podcast to talk about perfectionism, I'm so nervous and I want it to be perfect and it's not going to be. So I have to remember that my perfectionism does not control me and that everything's going to be okay.
Well, and I think it strengthens your case about perfectionism when you have an imperfect thing. And so when you're imperfect, it's you being perfect. The most perfect possible perfectionism podcast is imperfect. It's like a tongue twister.
So, yeah, I was going to say that five times fast. So how has perfectionism shown up in your life over the years?
Not to get super dark and sad, but even when I was like 3 years old, I remember being like, if I put this spoon in the wrong drawer, my parents are going to be so mad and my world will come crashing down. Like it felt catastrophic. The most minor things felt catastrophic from a very, very young age, which has manifested in a lot of different kinds of mental illnesses, including OCD and things like that, where it's this desperate need to control and using control as a way to feel safe. And I think that's one of the most important things we need to understand about perfectionism is we're trying to be perfect as a way to feel safe.
Yeah, that's the biggest takeaway that I've had is that the more I learn about my perfectionism, the more I realize that like, oh, I just don't feel safe. And that's my way of controlling things. Mm-hmm. It definitely showed up for me from a very young age of just like needing my grades to be perfect. Like I was so nervous if I got anything lower than an A in school, like I was just terrified that my parents were going to yell at me and that something terrible was going to happen. And it's funny because I talked to my brother about this, of just like why we were so scared of our parents, because they were wonderful parents and they never like did anything bad to us. But like we were both just like, we both just had this feeling of like, we cannot disappoint our parents. We have to be perfect. And there was just always that anxiety, like, I'm not good enough unless what I do is good enough. And definitely putting that emphasis on the outcome of our actions rather than just like who we were as people.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like that was a very like standard approach to parenting in like the 90s, where it's not bad parenting. It's not, they're not being bad or harmful necessarily, but it's just kind of that sense of like, you need to get good grades or like, you know, having those expectations. It's almost implicit and unspoken. It's not verbal abuse, but it's a really intense thing. And I really like approaches to parenting that are like, your grades might suffer sometimes. And maybe it's because you're, you know, having a hard time and that's okay. We support you. And, you know, having that kind of deeper understanding of what's going on with someone. And hopefully that would help them be more okay with imperfectionism.
Absolutely. Even when I was really good at things, I didn't necessarily like them. Mm. And so like, I would strive to be perfect in things, but I wouldn't strive to actually do things that I enjoyed.
That's
and cool. So I think that I mean, that's one of the reasons why I think I've gone down this very windy path to eventually, like, come back to my creativity, because I was never especially good at creative things. Like, when I did writing classes, I mean, I'd do fine. I'd get good grades, but, like, they were never, I don't know, super creative. I really just did what I thought other people would want to read. Once I finally stopped clinging to that perfectionism and started exploring things that I actually like, it was like, oh, wow. There's this whole other world over here of things that I'm not necessarily good at, but that I really enjoy. Like, who knew?
Yeah, that's such a good point, too. Trying to be perfect at something versus just enjoying it. And I feel like that really ties in, too, to how we both grew up, that there we were in subcultures where there was an expected way of doing things. And, you know, the grades thing may have come more from that subculture than your parents, of this sense of like, oh, we're good Christian kids and we get good grades and we don't drink and we don't swear and we don't have sex and we don't, you know, like there's a whole list of rules and you have to, like, it's almost like a Dance Dance Revolution where it's like, I have to hit all the right things at all the right times. And it has taken us, I mean, we've been out of it for like 12 years and it's taken us about that long to start being like, oh, I can just do things I like and that's okay.
Yeah. It's taken a while to recover. So you've talked a lot about the more negative aspects of perfectionism, but are there any things that you actually appreciate about the fact that you have been perfectionistic, or anything that you think that it's been actually a positive force in your life? Because I think that it's important to have that like balanced look at things. You know, when you have defense mechanisms that are like maybe overall harmful in your life, but you can be thankful for the ways that they've protected you over the years. So I kind of like to look at perfectionism that way too.
Yeah, well, and it's such a nuanced aspect of it, because perfectionism is also kind of responsible for every good thing in my life. The fact that I'm so, you know, I drive myself to be so on top of everything, so in control, so organized, that's helped me get through school and get jobs and get apartments I really like and, you know, do even creative projects, you know, things like writing a draft of a memoir, or even just simple things like making a collage. Because I'm so perfect, I often make things and do things I really like. And that's a hard aspect of it. Because if I did release perfectionism, I would also probably be like, oh, I have the worst apartment in this city and I hate my job, you know? So it is hard. I do appreciate that a lot of times, how it helps me, and I have to balance it with how it harms me, because it does both of that at the same time.
Yep. And as my therapist likes to say, and she always says it in that tone of voice too. Like, you're feeling this way, and this is also true.
Yeah. That's so much of life is the and.
Yeah, I definitely feel like perfectionism has been very helpful in helping me attain a certain level of success. Especially like when I was working in commercial real estate, I was very good at my job. And it gave me a certain level of success. It wasn't a success that I wanted, but it helped me be really good at what I do. And it helps me be really good at what I do now as an editor. As a perfectionist, I will make your work really good. I might spend a little too much time on it to my own detriment because I charge by the project, not by the hour, which is probably not good. But you know what? I think it's better for other people because I am a perfectionist. And I know that I will probably spend too much time on things. But yeah, so it definitely has been very helpful to get me where I am today.
Yeah, I feel like that's such an interesting aspect of this conversation and this topic in general that we just need to hold space for. I don't know if there's any answer to the fact that perfectionism is an extremely harmful and an extremely helpful force.
I mean, you could give it another word.
True.
I'm pretty sure Brené Brown has done this. Perfectionism and like striving for success are two different things.
Yeah. Something that's similar is people talk about the difference between like the voice of intuition and fear, and how they're two very different but very related things. And I feel like my visceral emotional experience of it is essentially combined. And so it's hard to tease out, you know, the difference between intuition and fear, the difference between helpful and harmful perfectionism. And a lot of times in that mess of stuff, sometimes fear is also a message. Sometimes harmful perfectionism is also a message. And so it's also that dichotomy of like good and bad things aren't always good and bad. Like sometimes it's just kind of a bunch of both. So what are the fears that drive your perfectionism?
Definitely a fear of failure. And I think a fear of just what other people are going to think of me, either privately or publicly, like whether they call me out on something. Yeah, especially like, I'm not dissing call-out culture because I do think it's important to call people out when they mess up, but it is a scary thing when you want to do everything perfectly. You're like, well, what if I mess up and I hurt somebody's feelings? Or what if I do the wrong thing and somebody calls me out on it and tells me that I'm stupid or harmful? Or I think that's definitely something that drives it. But more than anything, I think fear of failure is the main thing. What about you?
Yeah, I was thinking about this before, and I think that the best way I can say it is like the mind-numbing fear of rejection, judgment, or disapproval. And rejection feels like being cut off from life and love and all good things. Like it feels like obliteration to be rejected. Mm-hmm. It feels so terrifying. And yeah, I mean, I'm a little more okay with calling out call out culture. Like I'm, you know, I do think that it has enacted so much harm, and I didn't have as bad a social anxiety until I went back to college. And there was a lot of call out culture on campus, and there were situations that were just so intense. And I'm this new student where I'm like, oh my God, this is terrifying. And that was years ago, and I'm still so cautious, and that drives a lot of the perfectionism. And I do avoid a lot of conflict by being very careful about what I say, making sure I don't make sweeping generalizations. You all see in my Instagram, I will often say often. I often say many people. I don't say all people. And I think that's good. It's another situation of it being something that's also helpful, but it has done like a lot of damage to my psyche. And I know we've talked about before. I talk to a lot of people about it, a lot of colleagues who are like, I'm terrified all the time. And I think that's a really sad thing. And I think it impedes our work and impedes connection.
Yeah, definitely does.
So those are the fears. What have you found that helps you to challenge, comfort, or navigate around them?
For my fear of failure, what's been the most helpful has been to redefine what failure is. And for me, especially as I've started this business, failure to me is never getting started. And so the more I was able to redefine it to mean that, the more I was able to be like, okay, if failure means just never getting started, then any step that I take is going to, in and of itself, be perfect, quote unquote. So even if I don't take the right steps or I mess up, I'm still moving forward. So therefore I am successful. It's a really hard thing to redefine as a perfectionist, because as a perfectionist, you're like, no, but I messed up. That equals bad. And so redefining words is a struggle.
Yeah. One, redefining lifelong emotional experiences, I think, is a huge part of it too. And what I was going to say is you're bringing up such a good point. I feel like it should be a whole other conversation. Like we should dive deep into failure, because I failed, you know, I would say objectively, I failed 1,000 times throughout my business process. There's been so many things that I've been doing wrong, or I've learned, or it didn't go as well as I wanted. And that's been okay, because that's the process. And, you know, we're doing things, and that's what matters. And I think that is a really powerful thing to do to redefine, you know, because when I think about it too, I've had a couple of people point out to me like, well, you know, maybe that didn't go so well, but look at all the people you've connected with. Look at all of the people who have heard a message that you have and shared it with other people. There's all these different ways that I've been successful that I can't measure in my bank account or my Instagram followers.
Yeah, absolutely.
I wanted to share one of my strategies I found. This is a pretty recent one for me. So especially when it comes to conflict and the fear of being called out and things like that, I've been so afraid of conflict for so long that I cower. I cower all the time. And something I've literally just been discovering is like, I can stand up and be like, I stand by that. And that phrase has been really powerful lately to tell myself, like, I don't necessarily go out publicly and be like, no, I stand by that. But like to tell myself, okay, let me assess that. Did I do anything out of line? Did I do anything wrong? And if I did, I'll apologize. It's either I stand by it or I apologize. But being able to tell myself like, no, that's aligned with my values. That's aligned with what I wanted. And people might have a reaction to that, but that doesn't necessarily mean that I said something wrong. And sometimes the fact that someone had a reaction means it was something that needed to be said. So that one's helped me a lot.
That's a really good one. I like that, especially the willingness to evaluate and say, like, okay, let's see. Did I actually do something wrong? Because it's important to admit when we do. But then also, like, standing by yourself. I like that. I stand by it. I like it.
And it's helpful, too, when you have people in your life who are aware of that. Like, I'll check in with people when someone feels like they're going to get in trouble or did something wrong. I'll be like, you know, do you stand by it? And if the answer is yes, then awesome. I support you in standing by it. You know, if I also stand by it, unless I did something I wouldn't stand by. And if not, you know, okay, how can you go about apologizing? And that's not the end of the world if you have to apologize and make corrections and make it better.
Yeah. And I think it's also important to think about, you can fix mistakes. There's very few mistakes that are unfixable. If you say something on the internet, yes, it's on the internet, but you can also follow it up and be like, hey, I was wrong when I said that, if you need to.
And people might not accept that, and that's also okay.
Yes. And like acknowledging that the you that's on the internet is not you as a person. You're able to grow and change and be okay in yourself outside of the internet.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the most healing things people can do. Like when they get caught in the crossfire of conflict that they didn't intend, and maybe it was on them, maybe it was something else going on. But I think a lot of times the best thing to do is to log off and take some time to evaluate and, you know, heal and connect with people in your own life. And there's a book, I can't remember what it was called. I think it was called So You've Been Publicly Shamed. And it explored that, like people who have been like absolutely obliterated, like entire lives, jobs, everything, because of like something offhand they said on the internet. And yeah, like it is something that you step offline and you take time, and hopefully you come out a better person and a stronger person, and, you know, learn from it.
Definitely.
Awesome. Do you have any tricks for accepting when something isn't perfect or isn't how you want it to be?
Yeah, I think one, I consider, can I make this better? Which I think is an important question to ask yourself, because as a perfectionist, you're like, well, if I can't fix it, then it shouldn't exist. Mm-hmm. But it's like, okay, if something's out there, it's not perfect, can you fix it? If the answer is no, then you need to just go to step two, which is to take a deep breath. Mm-hmm. Do some grounding exercises if you need to, and then go eat some ice cream. Control what you can, fix what you can, but then acknowledge that I am safe outside of that thing that I made or that I did. And if I am safe, then I can go eat this ice cream and be perfectly content in this moment, and it's going to be okay.
I feel like that's such a powerful philosophy, and I've picked up on both of those from you. Like, one, I am safe. Two, go eat ice cream. That is the best approach possible. I love it.
Ice cream makes everything better.
Yeah, and that's actually, I mean, that's one of my biggest recommendations for loved ones of people with memory loss, too. People really don't know how to spend time with their loved one. And I'm like, go have ice cream. Like, you don't need to talk. You don't need to ask questions, tell stories. You know, they may not have that capability anymore. Just go eat ice cream. Like, it's a very simple step that we can use in so many situations that can bring just a little bit of relief.
Mm-hmm. So, what about you?
Yeah, I love this one that I started using, which is reframing imperfection and redefining mm-hmm. imperfection. And so my best example of it, I'm very perfectionistic about my living environment. I'm like the worst neat freak ever, to my detriment. Like, it causes me a lot of problems every single day. And I've gotten better about it. And one of the things is like something like the bugs in the lampshade. You know how bugs get caught in there? Like, I have one of those yeah. lamps that they die in. So
yeah.
I always am like, I need to clean that. And that's something that runs through my head a lot. I need to clean that. And now I'm like, lamps, I see lamps now as bug graveyards. And if it's a bug graveyard, I can just leave it there. And that's not, it's not bad. It's not wrong. It's just where they die. And that's okay.
Oh my God. I love that. It's just a bug graveyard.
And if we have children someday, I want to pass it along to them and be like, this is a bug graveyard. This is where the bugs die. It's okay. Don't put your hands in it, you know, but you know, and maybe every once in a while, clear it out so new bugs can die there, but like, it's okay. And you can do it.
Oh my gosh.
It's a really fun thing to do with other things too. you can take kind of anything and be like, it's not this bad thing that I think needs to be dealt with. It's this thing that just exists.
I love that. Now I'm trying to think of, like, what's my equivalent bug graveyard. And I can't think of anything off the top of my head, but I'm going to think of something eventually and just be like, it's a bug graveyard. Oh my gosh, that's my... I want that to be my new just, like, saying when I can't fix anything, if I can't fix something, or if, like, it's something that I really don't need to fix, just be like, it's a bug graveyard.
Bug graveyard, yes. You just generalized it into, like, the whole thing. I love that. I'm going to use that all the time. Another one that you might resonate with, I don't have a cool name for it, but something I think about a lot is, like, when I see dog hair around, instead of being like, oh no, I need to pick that up, I'm like, how lucky am I that I have this dog that sheds all over my house, you know?
Yeah.
I just use them as this, like, meditative reminder of how much I love them. That one helps a lot too. And yeah, there's just so many ways to explore. And it's kind of like bringing ugly art to our concept of how things should be. You know, it's like, mm-hmm. This thing's ugly and I accept it.
Yes, exactly.
So speaking about all that, what's something imperfect that you've made or done that you love despite or even because of the imperfections?
I've made a lot of very imperfect things recently. It's been kind of my whole deal. pick one. Okay.
There's too many.
There's a lot. I'm just going to go with the simple one that's right in front of my face and say this podcast.
Yeah.
Especially because it's something that I never thought I would do, ever. The thought of me putting my own voice, especially because, like, I've historically hated my voice, hated hearing it on recordings. I mean, a lot of people say that. Like, yeah, I get cringy when I hear my own voice. So the fact that I can talk to you for an hour, like, listen to it, edit it, listen to my voice over and over again, and still put it out into the world and be like, here, other people listen to it. That is a level of subverting my own perfectionism that I never thought I would attain.
That's huge. That's such a huge accomplishment.
Yeah, it's mind-boggling to me that I have been able to do that, because it is imperfect. We say a lot, the audio quality is not spectacular.
There's always dogs.
You know, there's dogs barking in the background. There are times when, like, as I'm editing it, I'm like, oh, I wish I would have said this. And it's just like, well, this is what it is. Like, I'm not going to go back and re-record over it, you know? So it is an excellent practice in letting go of perfectionism. And I'm really proud of it every time we put it out.
It really is. And it's funny, I came up with this question and didn't even think about how perfect of an example this podcast is, because it's something we truly love and enjoy because it's imperfect. And if we were trying to make something perfect, like, you know, where we stopped saying and we had professional production and we re-recorded things that we didn't like and we had our dogs locked away and all those different things, we would not enjoy that at all. It'd be just a lot, and we wouldn't be able to have such open conversations so often and with so much freedom, and that would take away from all of this. So
exactly.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I want to steal yours, but I will let you have it. I have a good example, which is my tattoos. So I think that there's probably some small detail in every single one of my tattoos, and I have 11 or 12 of them, that I would have changed if I could have at the time. Just little things. And it's so funny because people always say, like, oh, you'll regret your tattoos. And it's like, you could say I regret some parts of my tattoos, but I'm also like, no, like, that's part of my story, part of my journey and expression. And it is what it is. And I'm not going to fix it. I thought at one point I'd go back and I'd spend all the money to go, like, fix these tiny details. And it's like, no, like, I love my tattoos. I love that they're just living expressions. And yeah, they're imperfect and perfect at the same time.
And that's such another excellent example. I feel like we've talked about this before, how, like, you will notice those, but no one else will notice those things. Oh. Ever. And I mean, maybe someone will one day, but, like, nobody looks at you as closely as you look at you. And so the more you can just say, like, these are the imperfect parts of me and I love them. And the more you can kind of forget about them,
yeah.
Like, the more you realize that, like, other people don't care.
Mm-hmm. And now I forget about it for, like, months at a time, you know, like, I haven't thought about the things I don't like for I mean, it's been like 2 years since I really sat and thought about like the things, because they're just here and I like them and they're good. And like you said, that's actually another strategy that's really powerful, is being like, okay, I'm zoomed in on this 100 times. Someone else is going to see this at a glance and they're not going to think twice about it. Are they going to notice? And I use that a lot. Like, my microwave is something I try to keep really clean, and I'll be like trying to get every last thing off. And I'm like, if anyone looked at this, they'd be like, this is the cleanest microwave I've ever seen. And that, I use that all the time. I use it with like cleaning a mirror, the fridge I try to keep clean too, floors, everything. Like, I'm like, anyone would be like, no, it's good.
Yep. So overall, how has your relationship with perfectionism changed in the past few years, past year?
It's been changing a lot. I feel like I mentioned a lot that things have been changing for me in like the past 6 months. There's just a lot of different things I've been learning, and like I'm growing as a person. And I think imperfectionism is definitely one of them, and goes along with improvisation, which we talked about in another conversation. Yeah, like I've just been learning about just like being a human and just doing whatever and enjoying it and not stressing so much. And I've let myself off the hook off a lot of things. I used to keep like meticulous track of my budget, like every single day, every single transaction I ever spent. I used to have like a cleaning list that I tried to do every week. I used to have a paper planner. And like, if I was out and about and like had an appointment, I'd have to like write it down on my phone to come home and make sure it was written down. Like, I was just agonizing myself, terrorizing myself with perfection. And in the past 6 months, I've started releasing a lot of that. And I'm like, wow, life is a lot better.
That's so good.
Yeah, it is good.
What do you think prompted those changes?
There was a very natural process that happened for me when I was coming up on 30, where I started to really evaluate my life and what I wanted out of it and what my values were, which I love life and I want to enjoy it as much as I can. And so that was really incongruent. So that was happening. And then as that evaluation was happening, I was getting more involved with reimagining dementia, which I literally mention every single episode, but it's always relevant. I got more involved with them, and they're just such a vibrant group of people who are really living so fully and so thoughtfully. And I've just learned so much from so many of the people I've met there. And that's really trickled into that process of, you know, evaluating my life and moving forward in new ways, which is what they're all about. They're all about creating, they call it performances, new performances of life, new performances of perfectionism or imperfectionism, new performances of, you know, in our case, dementia. And I've just learned so much from them.
Interesting. So like performances as in just like how you are going about performing your life?
Yeah. So I didn't know that when I first started learning from them, they said performances. And I was like, yeah, I'm not a theater person. But the philosophy they're grounded in, social therapeutics, it's performance as in any given thing that you do is a performance, which also ties back to I studied sociology, and we talk about that concept a lot. And also in gender, they talk about, you know, performing gender or performing your identity, all these different performances you don't even realize you're doing, and you don't realize that you can change. And that's essentially what you and I are talking about with this, is how do we change our performance of these things?
Yes, this is one of the things that I've been really fascinated about as I've started to let go of perfectionism and like show my face more, show my voice more. I mean, mostly on social media, but like as I'm just like integrating it into my business more, and I'm like looking at myself and I'm like, this is still me, but it's such a different version of me than I ever thought would make her way out into the world. I always saw myself as a introverted, quiet, soulful person who didn't need to be loud or make a lot of connections with people. And the more I do it, the more I'm like, oh, I actually kind of like this. This can be me too. I guess I am still that quiet person from time to time, but like I'm able to, like you said, perform this other side of me, and it's all still my whole imperfect self that I'm getting to show more.
Yeah, I relate to that a lot. I would say the same, that I thought I'm just this introverted person. I'm quiet. I don't need to be around people. I don't need to draw attention. And now I'm like, I have a message and I want to tell you, and I want to connect with all the other people who are talking about this thing, and I want to be out there in the world and part of things. And like, that's not me. That's not what I thought was me at all. But obviously I am, and you are too. And it's, I think it's a more full version of who we are and of being human.
I love it. I mean, I guess I mostly answered it, the how my relationship has changed. But I think a lot of it has been, most of the transformation was like through therapy. I feel like it really set the groundwork for getting over my perfectionism, coming to terms with who you are, and like loving yourself and accepting both the quote unquote good and quote unquote bad parts of yourself. And so that laid the groundwork, but I still didn't have occasion to like push past perfectionism because I was in a professional job that, you know, I did it, like, I always had to have that kind of perfect facade. So there was nothing pushing me out of perfectionism. But then when I left that job, starting my own business, was like, all right, you have this groundwork now, go be imperfect. Like, it just shoved me out, like, out of the car or whatever, whatever metaphor you want to use. And that was what made me actually have to start practicing letting go of imperfection. Which, it sucks that, like, you need that kind of event to get you out of that stuck place of perfectionism.
Yeah, I think that speaks a lot to society, and especially an ultra-capitalist society and just kind of Western society in general, that there is a lot of constraints and expectations of perfection, and then you better be on time to the minute every day to work, or early, and do as much as you can, as perfectly as you can, as long as you can. Like, it definitely is a restrictive dynamic. And I think something that has changed for both of us, like you're saying, you started practicing imperfection. And I think that's where we're both at now, which is that we've known we've had a problem with perfectionism for a really long time. But now we're both actively every single day working on that, and not working on it like, oh, I'm like, it's work, but we're playing with it and breaking out of it in really fun, cool ways.
Yeah, playing with imperfection has been really fun, especially with ugly art, which is what this whole thing is based off of.
Hey,
yeah.
Why don't you tell people about your new 5-day ugly art course?
That's a great idea. So I started this ugly art course, which is really just, it's just 5 days. You'll get an email prompt, and it will have kind of a short little spiel about what I've learned through ugly art, and then there'll be instructions for making ugly art, and you can choose the medium. In most cases, in some cases, I tell you to like draw a picture or write something, but for most of the days you get to choose whatever medium you want to play with. And then I encourage you to like meditate or journal afterwards about the experience to kind of bring it home and let it settle with you. Oh, my voice is shaking when you ask me to talk about this. My God.
That is because you care about it. I've noticed that I don't get shaky so much on camera anymore, but when I first started doing like lives and stuff, my voice would be so shaky when I cared the most.
Yeah, definitely. But yeah, a few people have signed up for it so far. It's free, and you can sign up for it just directly on the front page of my website. Somebody did their first day today, and they shared what they drew. And it was just this like cute little crazy looking person. And then they actually journaled at the bottom of the page and were talking about how the experience was healing. And it felt really awkward at first, but the more that they just let their hand kind of guide through the page, it was a healing art experience. And I was just like, I love that you called it healing, because like, that's how it feels. It feels that every time I go and I make something ugly on purpose, I'm healing that perfectionistic part of myself that holds all of these high expectations. And I'm just like letting her go. And I'm like telling her, I love you, but you're going to sit over here and I'm going to just make whatever I want on this page. And it's going to be terrible. And I'm going to love it.
I love that so much. And I love that you're doing it as this 5-day offering to people, because you know, if it was just this one time, like do this for 10 minutes thing, they wouldn't get that trajectory of like, oh, wow, I can see and feel the difference through these 5 days. And, you know, it's showing them the transformation that they can have.
Yeah, and it's not quite so long as a month like I tried the first time.
Yeah, so I'll be honest with you, my ADHD is bad. That's why you haven't gotten feedback from me on it, because I've like done it here and there, but I haven't seen the transformation because I haven't been consistent, which is my own problem. But yeah, I should sign up for your 5-day thing and actually do it.
I mean, I will say it's not just you. I was sending the prompts to myself and I didn't even want to do them after the third week. I'm like, ugh, whatever.
It's hilarious. Oh my gosh. If there's one thing about humans, we don't want to do things.
It's true. But that was also like a really good example of, I didn't really know what I was doing with that experiment. I was just like, yeah, 4 weeks, people will do this thing for 4 weeks. And it didn't go that way. It wasn't perfect, but I still got valuable information from it. And I was able to transform it into this much shorter, compact version, which is much better.
When I also feel like I believe the war in Ukraine started during that time, I think. Like, things have just been...
Right, yeah. It was the end of the last week.
Yeah. So it's... Yeah. People have had a lot going on. And even just for normal sure. life in this society is just so much for people. So, yeah, I think 5 days is a perfect amount of time for them to get that teaser and then want to work with you more on it. Because that's part of it, too. Yeah. You know, you want to have them see the experience and then partner with you, collaborate with you to continue doing that consistently.
That's the goal.
Yeah. So everyone should do it right now.
Is there anything, I know we talked about, well, we already talked about something imperfect that we made that we love.
Yes, but I do have a fun one from this week.
Oh, do tell. Yeah. What's something ugly you made?
So Rematching Dementia had our member gatherings this week. We have three about every 3 months. So it'll be like a Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, every quarter. And something that Mary said, which inspired me, Mary's the founder, and we were going into breakout rooms and she said, have at least one person like take notes or do something to report back. And she said, and also it doesn't need to be just written notes. It can be anything. You can do a song and dance. You can do a interpretive movements, or you can draw or paint or something. And so I was like, yeah, this is very aligned with what I've been learning and talking about. And, you know, especially from you and from the coalition. So I got markers out, and in my group of 7 people, each person I grabbed a color for. And as they talked, I just did whatever with it. And It was really interesting because I thought it might just be like scribbles, but it was cool. It was kind of like this person had their orb over here, and then that led into this person. And then we each talked for a bit, but then someone would ask someone else a question. So then I'd like grab their pen and like draw a little line, and then it'd lead into the next little orb and another. And I unfortunately got distracted because I was talking a bit too, and I didn't get the whole thing, but it would have been so cool just to witness that conversation, not be part of it at all, and get every single aspect of every single person into it. It was really cool.
That is so clever. I love that.
It's the kind of thing I learned from you. So it's your own idea.
Oh.
Yeah. Is there anything you've done that you've particularly enjoyed recently? Any of your ugly art?
Not that I particularly enjoyed. Well, I did make some stuff, but I did want to talk about this ugly art because it was something that I ended up just like, it wasn't even art, but it's something I ended up hating. It was something that I was like, I'm going to do this imperfectly and I'm just going to do it. I just did like a string of tweets that I was trying to lead up to like telling people about my workshop, and I hated it. I hated every second of it. I was like, this is, you know what? I feel bad about this, but I like tried to get my voice into it, and I was just like trying to be playful. I hated it. It was awful. Didn't get any responses, which is fine. I don't even have a following on Twitter. I was just hoping that like the hashtags would do something, but it didn't. It was bad. But I'm still glad that I did it, just because I pushed through and posted something, even though it was awful, and let it be. So I'm proud of myself for doing that, but I still hated it.
That is what so much of social media feels like, though, is like just throwing stuff everywhere and seeing what sticks. And that's how you learn what does and what doesn't. Because maybe those hashtags would have worked and you would have gotten all these people, and that happens, you know, like you've seen, like the first reel you posted got a pretty big response. And so you just never know. It's funny you say that too, because before the member gathering, I was like, I need to do something ugly for this week. So I have something to say, I have to do my homework. And so I made this collage that I just hated it. Like, I grabbed 5 random pieces of scrapbook paper that my partner got at a thrift store that's like random stuff. Like it's like different images and stuff. And it was just so ugly. And I was thinking about it and reflecting about how I feel like that's part of it. Sometimes we have to just be like, I hate this thing and I hate this process. I'm mad about it, but I'm also going to do it.
Yeah. And actually this is perfect because the last few weeks I've been kind of sludging through my creativity, and Kristen Kiefer, I think her name is, she is a creative writing coach that I follow. And she was talking about the idea of creative lust and how like that beautiful, like inspiration, joyful creativity is a form of creative lust. But that's not like true creativity. Like it's something that is going to pass, and you have to get to that point where you are into that love stage of the relationship where you're dedicated to this thing and you're not always going to be happy with it. But it's like this, you're going into the long-term relationship part of your creativity,
which is where you write books and where you, you know, have just these beautiful things that take a long time, and you have to hone that.
And that means making things you're not happy with sometimes, and that's okay.
Yeah, I love that. That's awesome. I have one more idea I forgot to share. Speaking of social media and stuff, I've started intentionally leaving typos. That's been a really good practice where I'll be like, oh, I should fix that. I didn't say it, or I added an extra letter, and I'm just going to leave it. And that's really helped a lot too.
That's a good practice. That saves you time too.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll be like, I'll see it. I'll be rereading it, because of course you post something and you reread it to make sure it's perfect. And I'll be like, oh, I need to go up, scroll up, edit it, go down, find it, fix it, redo it. And it's like, no, I'm good.
That's so good. That was one of the first things that I had to start evaluating with my perfectionism, was how much time I was wasting. Mm-hmm. So I would spend hours on a single social media post or a single email that was going out. And I was like, I'm wasting so much time trying to make this perfect. I need to let it go.
And it's wasting your time and life force and joy. And it's also impeding your ability to be there for people and to be doing what you're meant to be doing. And nobody needs us sitting and spending hours on one post that they're going to just scroll past in a minute.
Exactly. Good for you. That's such a good practice.
Yeah, it's been good. I didn't realize until this conversation that I've been doing a lot of different strategies. And I mean, my whole business is built around strategies and accommodations and new ways of thinking. And so this is kind of, you know, it's kind of my thing. And I didn't realize I was doing it so much for myself. And it does help.
Good. Amazing. Well, we've made lots of ugly things this week and pushed past our perfectionism.
Yeah, and have fun doing it.
Is there anything you want to plug or tell people where to find you?
So my Instagram page, Let's Make Moments, I have been lately shifting to doing just more education and advocacy on there. And so there's just a lot of kind of uplifting, encouraging approaches and ideas. And so I've been really liking sharing that. And then I also want to put it on people's radars that I'll be launching a program soon to help people process their relationship to dementia, feel more empowered, more at peace, more prepared. So that's kind of the two lanes I'm in right now, is the education aspect and then the preparing for this program.
Awesome. I'm excited to learn more about your program.
Me too.
People can find me at scribeandsunshine.com. And I'm going to time this. We record these a few weeks in advance. So I'm going to time this to where this should be coming out on May 2nd, which is wild. That's a long time from now, but it's May 2nd. And I am going to be putting on my perfectionism workshop again at the end of May. And so if you're listening to this at the beginning of May, you should go sign up, because the first 2 weeks of May, the tickets are going to be half price. So you will be able to sign up for my workshop at a lower rate, and it'll be great. So if anything rings true from this episode and you're like, I need to move past some of my perfectionism, I talk about a lot of the stuff we talked about today and a lot more. So check that out and it'll be great.
Yeah, it's like a little version of this, or this is a little version of that, rather.
Yeah. All right. Keep it ugly, everybody.
Keep it ugly.